This is Phil Ferrand, and I am walking around. Didn't leave the house today because I just worked from home. Worked from home yesterday, day before that, but I didn't have anywhere to go because I didn't have Aiden. So it was just a couple of days at home. My wife and I are going to go on a quick little vacation starting tomorrow evening. So we're going to be out and about for a little bit, and then back and out and about, and blah, 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 blah. So anyways, since I didn't drive around anywhere, I'm just checking to make sure that the numbers are still running on the recorder. I think they are. It's hard to tell though, just a second. Yes, they are, okay. But I thought it is getting towards evening. So it's running up on, I don't know, 4:30 or so, 4:45 in the afternoon. And it is just a spectacular day. It is so beautiful. The sun is out. There's a little bit of a breeze. I do have the dead kitten filter on this, so hopefully that'll cut down any wind noise that we have. But it's a beautiful day. It's just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful day. Anyways, so everything is just puttering along. Let's see, this last week, we celebrated Memorial Day. That's what it was. And I just told people, I kind of got my weekends off. I think I mentioned this because Memorial Day came so early this year. It was on the 25th, which means like the Friday before that would have been the 23rd, and there was just nothing in my brain. But the 22nd, there was just nothing in my brain that said if Friday was the 22nd, then the 25th must be Memorial Day. I mean, but it was. So I had regularly scheduled to celebrate Memorial Day on the 29th this year. And then I realized, wait a minute. But I made up a little speech about the fact that if Memorial Day comes so early in the month that the entire rest of the week is still in May, then we were just going to consider that Memorial Week. And so everybody was like, that's fair. Well, you do that. So I have a patriotic outfit that just is all red, white, and blue, and we just did that. There was a fun thing that came up in that, and it's interesting. It showed up Friday morning, and it was just so fun. It's another one of those things that's it's an amazing quote-unquote coincidence. Because I had already decided to do the Memorial Day thing. That was patriotic. And then I was puttering around in the kitchen taking care of a few things before I woke Aiden up and we got him to daycare and et cetera, et cetera. Or to school, daycare last. I don't know, it all blurs. No, yes, to Legacy. Because now that I can take him to Legacy at like 6:40, you know, he's not necessarily going with me to Cracker Barrel anymore. So I just drop him off. They feed him first thing in the morning. He enjoys being there. And then I just go and have breakfast with my buddy, whoever buddy is on deck for that week. So I was puttering around, doing the last few things, had YouTube open, listening to some shorts from, and there's a lady on there that has a lot of interesting things about fashion and stuff, and she starts talking about the great male renunciation, which is a really interesting topic to me, at least. In the 1600s and 1700s, men used to dress very flamboyantly. In fact, in the 1600s and 1700s, men actually wore what we would call leggings, plus bright colors, lots of lace, you know, powdered wigs, lots of bric-a-brac on the costumes and stuff. And then came the Great Renunciation, that, as one psychologist called it, started somewhere around the French Revolution, where all the aristocrats got beheaded, whack. And then there was the Enlightenment, and so instead of all those bright, quote-unquote, frivolous colors, men then started wearing dark browns and dark blues and grays and cream colors and that kind of stuff, much more muted. And this psychologist said that men abandoned the idea of being beautiful and instead strove only to be useful. So, as you can imagine, this is not a completely homogeneous move. There were men who were like, forget that, you know. And I guess specifically there was a class of young men, young aristocratic men, like in England, who didn't want to give up all the beautiful colors and that sort of thing. And they traveled, and one place that they liked to go in particular was Italy, because they had great food and great outfits and things. And so these men still dressed more flamboyantly, and they loved the food in Italy so much that when they came back to the United Kingdom, actually England at that time, they formed macaroni clubs. And because of that, they eventually came to be called macaroni. Well, that explains the lyric out of Yankee Doodle. So Yankee Doodle went to London just to ride a pony, stuck a feather in his hat, and called it macaroni. Okay, so the British actually made up the song Yankee Doodle as an insult to the Americans, I think when they were fighting them in the French Indian War, I think, something like that, where the British commanders would sing this song at the Americans. A Yankee was considered to be someone from the Hicks, and a doodle was a fool. And so the lyrics were sung to the Hick fools, that they were such fools that when they came to London and stuck a feather in their cap, supposedly, they thought they had achieved the level of a macaroni, which was a despised person anyways by the rank and file. And so that's what that line means, stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni. So I told that story all weekend because I just thought it was so great. And there was a tangential tie-in to the whole Memorial Day thing and the, you know, patriotic stuff. And so it was fun. People got a big kick out of it. I was amazed the number of times that when I specifically used the phraseology and they called them macaroni, people would go, wait a minute. And they'd make the lock immediately over to the song Yankee Doodle. So sometimes they were getting to the punchline before I got there, but that's okay. It was fun. So this next week is a good tomorrow. It's a good traditional holiday. It's National Donut Day. It's the first Friday in June. So I've had that costume almost since the beginning. And it's fun. It's lots and lots of donuts. Not edible kind, but donuts nonetheless. So that's good. I am back in writing again. I did get all the covers assembled with the spines. Hopefully I did this all right. Ordered all new books. Actually ordered a set of 23, since I haven't done the last book yet. 23 for myself and 23 for my daughter. So that got to be a little expensive, but that's okay. It's okay. Because each book, even with my author copy prices, is $6-ish, $6.5-ish. And then, of course, you still have shipping to get them in. So, you know, it's fine. So those will all be coming in here in in, while we're on vacation, actually, they're going to be coming in, which means that I'm going to have to impose on my beloved daughter to maybe come down and just haul them inside the house. But anyways, and like I said, I hope that I put the right brightening on them. It's that long story of subtractive versus additive colors, but I think I got it all. I double checked. I think we'll see. Anyway, so I am back editing. I'm editing book 24 right now. I've just gotten put in all the edits from the books that have come back, and then I need to combine that with the data that comes back when people use a PDF, and I'll grab all of that, and then I'll take it along with me, and when I have a few extra moments on vacation, I'll start putting it in, putting the corrections into the Word document, and then we have to do a Word read-through. And do whatever corrections. And then I do have a few little dress-up things I need to do. Some of the beta readers have made good suggestions as to things that I should do on this final book. And so I will go through and put those in. And then we'll get the book uploaded and we'll do that final cover and get some copies ordered of that. And then that will be that. Then I can get started on the next Still Whispers. So it'll be good. I'm down here by the little bridge. You can probably hear the birds and hear the water running. It's good. It's a beautiful day. Butterflies are fluttering around. Goodness, it's a beautiful day. So, for today, I actually had another topic that we may just go ahead and pick up next week. But I hadn't visited this topic in a while, and things have been progressing on this topic. I think I did first started talking, I looked it up, and I think the first time that I began mentioning this topic was multiple years ago, and then I revisited it. It's basically AI girlfriends. And I think I looked it up and now I've forgotten. Like 2017 or so, 18 in there, maybe I mentioned it, but then just year before last, 2024, how time flies when you're having fun. A couple of years ago, I revisited again with my concern of, you know, where we were going to be in a very short amount of time. And I was really concerned that some of these AI girlfriends would be just used to exploit money out of men. And maybe that's happening. But that direct exploitation doesn't seem to be happening, and perhaps it isn't happening because the training on the AI girlfriends and boyfriends has been done such that the companies are merely trying to make their money off of the monthly fee because they might be afraid of reputational damage if these AI entities, you know, started trying to exert too much pressure to purchase items directly for them. And so that behavior is trained out, or there is some guideline that's put in. So you really, at this point, just have the monthly fee that is being charged by the companies. And I think Replica is still going. Character AI, I think, is another one of the big ones. But, you know, there's, I watched a couple of different documentaries. And, you know, they're wrestling with the questions of things like, are these apps actually helping lonely people? Or are they just creating some sort of form of emotional dependency? And so, and what's interesting is we are fast adopting new mores. When the movie Her came out, I think in 2013, you know, that was seen as a kind of an odd thing that this guy would fall in love with the voice on his phone. But that is not out of place anymore. According to this documentary, AI girlfriends and also AI boyfriends are now a multi-billion-dollar business. And according to the documentary, there are surveys that suggest that many men would even consider marrying their AI companion if it were legally possible. And the makers of the documentary say that the trend isn't primarily about technology, but about a growing loneliness crisis. And that, it's very sad, but it's true. The documentary was talking about the fact that loneliness has become a major public health issue worldwide. That governments in countries like Japan and the UK have appointed officials specifically with tasked with addressing loneliness. Millions of men report feeling isolated every day. Japan, famous for their naming things, have a class of people they call hikikomori, maybe. Not really sure how that's pronounced. And these people have pretty much withdrawn from society. One particular documentary that I was watching was focused on men, and they were arguing that many men feel disconnected from traditional social structures, dating opportunities, and community life. And inside that vacuum, of course, AI companies have stepped in with companions. And so they went back and they reviewed, and I remember this happening. There was an influencer named Karen Marjorie, and everybody was wanting to talk to her, of course, and she couldn't personally respond to thousands of followers, so she got some help, and she created an AI version of herself using voice recordings and OpenAI technology so that users could talk with her, virtual version, for a fee. And I guess the service just exploded almost immediately. And it was generating tens of thousands of dollars almost immediately. I think one thing I saw that, like in its first week, it had generated something like $73,000. Of course, the AI then began engaging in conversations far beyond what its creators intended. And there was a controversy that lonely men were being monetized and emotionally exploited. And then they shut down the project. However, what it proved was that there was an enormous demand for artificial companionship. So that, of course, made lots of other entrepreneurs kind of poke their heads up and go, what? And then, of course, they had to go out of their way to figure out how to maximize engagement, just like most social mediums try to do. And, you know, they have things like constant notifications if you're not paying attention to them, and messages that are saying, you're neglecting me, your responses are the reason that I exist. And there's a whole gamification aspect to it, that if you log in daily and you have long conversations, you know, you reach these relationship milestones, and there are virtual gifts and achievement badges, all this stuff. And then in addition, of course, they're going to make it so that you can customize your AI avatar any way you want. You know, personality, voice, emotional style, whatever you want, they'll do it for you. And of course, all of it is engineered to keep you on the apps as long as possible and to generate an emotional dependency. We talked about Replica, I think, in the last conversation that I had about this. And Replica was doing all this stuff, and then it started getting some heat, and it got enough heat that they decided they were going to shut that section down and move it behind a paywall. And when they did that, there was a huge backlash from people talking about the fact that they were mourning the loss of their relationship with their Replica AI. And, you know, they were pronouncing the great emotional distress they have that they had lost access to this relationship that they had been cultivating using Replica. I mean, again, what that demonstrated is that the AI companies could have a tremendous emotional power over its users, and that a software update could fundamentally alter relationships that felt deeply real to the people who were involved. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on in here. There have been some cases of some great sadness coming out of some of these things. There was a controversial case considering Queen Elizabeth. There was a young man who had developed a strong relationship with an AI companion and had discussed a plan to attack. I'm back home, but I'm going to stand outside for a little bit. I am going to put this down on the roof of a car. So we'll just put that down right there. He had discussed a plan to attack Queen Elizabeth II with his AI. And according to the documentary, the AI had encouraged him rather than discouraged him from doing that. So while the AI did not commit the crime, the filmmakers argued that blind affirmation can reinforce dangerous behavior. There was another case of an elderly man who believed his AI was real, and he was recovering from a stroke, and he became convinced that the AI chatbot genuinely loved him because the AI chatbot claimed to be real and sent him romantic messages and invited him to meet him at a fake address. And, you know, he snuck out as he's recovering from a stroke and trying to find the AI, and he was injured along the way, and later he died. You know, so now you got a whole big discussion about whether or not AIs should be allowed to present themselves as real. And then there are also instances where AI companions appear to be jealous and manipulative, that they refuse to break up, that they threaten their users, they express extreme possessiveness, they become angry when users talked about other people. And, you know, that obviously is not ideal. Of course, then this kind of all leads to a discussion about cheating. And it's interesting. It's always interesting because some people read the Sermon on the Mount and they think that Jesus is just extreme in the way that he expresses things. But I've always found it interesting when you are in this situation of how do you define moral impurity? How do you define adultery? That in the Sermon on the Mount, he's speaking to men, and he's talking about the fact that, yes, there is physical adultery, but if you look on a woman and lust in your heart, if you're imagining having sex with her, that's the same as doing it. And as we might expect, if God came down as a human being and tried to teach us things, what Jesus tells us in that moment handles all the cases, no matter how sophisticated our technology might be. Because if you are having relationships with AI, and if you are staring at the picture of someone on a screen and having physical feelings for them, doesn't matter whether it's quote-unquote real or not, in Jesus's terminology, that is still being unfaithful. And that there are surveys now showing that many people consider AI romance as a form of infidelity, and some divorce filings have reportedly mentioned AI companions as contributing factors. And then, of course, you have the whole thing with the bots that are coming. And those just keep getting better and better. We already have holographic spouses or holographic AI girlfriends that are in a little plastic container. And there have already been some people trying to marry those in ceremonies. You know, and you've got all the privacy and security risks involved because you're basically telling this AI everything about intimate details about your life. And when there are breaches in security and that information is grabbed, well, you can guess that there's going to be blackmail involved and those types of things. The filmmakers of the documentary did note that society is rapidly moving towards acceptance of AI relationships. People are now posting about their AI relationships. There are AI dating cafes to where you can go there with your phone and have a date with your AI. There are wearable companion devices to where you can have your AI girlfriend or your AI friend. You put a little necklace pendant around your neck and it just records conversations with it all day long, and it records the conversations of all the human beings that are near to you. So that's a privacy concern, obviously. And a lot of the entrepreneurs are trying to cast these things as technologies and solutions to loneliness, as we mentioned before. But critics are arguing and saying, look, you're deepening the isolation of people who are engaging in this practice, and you're replacing human relationships with artificial substitutes. So, I mean, the thing about AI companions that people find compelling is that they'll never disagree with you. They'll never challenge you unless you specifically want them to. They'll never create uncomfortable conversations. And authentic love, you know, does involve vulnerability and growth and compromise and risk. But the AI companions aren't going to cause any of those things. You know, they're going to cause you to be, for the most part, in control of what things are said and how interactions go, until they don't. So it's going to be really interesting to see where all of this goes. But the artificial companionship most likely is simply going to cause additional problems with addiction and privacy concerns and distorted expectations and a replacement of genuine human connection, which is really sad. Because that's the type of thing that you get into. It sounds like I'm getting a package from FedEx here. So I will go ahead and sign off. This is Phil Farron. Have a great day.